These are African rhythms, passed down to us through ancient spirits. Feel the spirit, a unifying force. Come on, move with the spirit. Stand up, clap your hands.
From WSNC 90.5 FM, a broadcasting service and NPR affiliate of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Africa World Now Project. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. Today, the contradictory musings of a, quote, new, unquote, black studies. Africa World Now Project is next. It must be said, we have entered the most aggressive phase of European modernity's disintegration, one that has been built upon decades of exploitation, human and natural. This may seem to be a very strong statement. Some may even suggest that it is an overstatement. It is neither. It is not based on speculation or opinion. The map of human history, the warnings of anti-racists, anti-racial capitalists, environmentalists, anti-war thinkers, advocates, activists have predicted this moment. Octavia Butler, Martin Delaney, and Ngugi write and wrote about this moment. Fanon, Cabral, Biko, Irma, Jeche, Du Bois, the Boggs, the Jacksons, Amir Baraka theorized this moment. Coltrane, Coleman attempted to play us toward another direction. Simone, Lincoln, Holiday provided a way to understand and see beyond this moment. It is our collective responsibility to ensure that we utilize this space, this moment of fracturing, to create something new. We have been given the tools. Our ancestors gave us the map. Let us read it together. To reformulate a black study within the epistemic and philosophical architecture that is inadequate to properly engage its trajectory and call it new is a contradiction of the highest order. Today, we will explore the contradictory musings of this new Black Studies with Dr. Corey Walker. Corey D.B. Walker is the Wake Forest Professor of the Humanities at Wake Forest University. He is author of A Noble Fight, African American Freemasonry and the Struggle for Democracy in America, University of Illinois Press. Editor of Community Wealth Building and the Reconstruction of American Democracy, Can We Make American Democracy Work? Editor of the special issue of the Journal of Political Theology on Theology and Democratic Futures, and associate editor of the award-winning Sage Encyclopedia of Identity. He has also published over 60 articles, essays, book chapters, and reviews, appearing in a wide range of scholarly journals, and co-directed and co-produced the film Fifeville with acclaimed artist and filmmaker Kevin Jerome Everson. He has held faculty and academic leadership positions at Brown University, University of Virginia, Virginia Union University, and Winston-Salem State University, and visiting faculty appointments at Frederick Schiller University at Gina, Union Presbyterian Seminary, and University of Richmond. Our show is produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descended communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Corporation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, and Ghana, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all peoples. Enjoy the program. I'm here today with Dr. Corey Walker. How are you doing today, Corey?
I'm doing fine, James. How about yourself?
Oh man, I'm doing okay, considering this, the circumstances and the conditions within which we are living at this particular moment. Yes. It's unmasking a lot of particular things. And, you know, I go up and down as with everybody else, right? You know, sometimes people think that folk who are professors or thinkers or whatever are not human, you know, but we're very much human.
Indeed. I think it's causing us to really reassess what we've considered throughout our lives to be what is normal. And in light of this pandemic, it's not only unmasking those deep inequities that have structured our everyday lives, it's also triggered new forms of imagination about new realms of being and possibility. And now there's so many conversations going around throughout the world about how shall we structure our lives and how shall we live in light of this. So in many ways, it's this dialectic of despair, but also the dialectic of despair and hope, if you will.
Yeah, and oftentimes when we talk about dialectics and contradictions, a lot of times we do not give consideration or take into consideration the actual hope part of that, or the visionary part of that. We tend to get caught up into, you know, that overanalyzing or analytical paralysis, so to speak, of the contradiction itself. And so that dialectic becomes important, because the dialectic is something that allows us to hold two thoughts in our head at once to be able to move forward. And they're constantly interacting with each other.
Yeah, I think we are complex beings. And I've been spending more and more time with Adrienne Piper, famous artist and philosopher, in her work. And really, Piper advances this notion of the thought event and how thinking can really, thinking is an active event and can transform consciousness. So how do we begin to cultivate the thought event to really transform the ways in which we cognate our everyday lives, our existence, and the self, and new possibilities? So I'm hopeful, but I'm also deeply historical. And so what that means is, when I look across the litter of the 20th century and I see four pandemics, of course, 1918, 1957 pandemic, 1968 pandemic, and HIV/AIDS pandemic. The outflow of all those pandemics was not a radically different world. I mean, after 1918, Spanish flu, you had the Red Summer of 1919. After the Asian flu of 1957, you had the creation of SCLC and the continuation of the Black freedom struggle, and of course, decolonization throughout Africa and the world, and the continued reconsolidation of the North Atlantic bloc, and continuation of wars of aggression. The Hong Kong flu of 1968 was followed by, came on the heels of the assassination of MLK and RFK, and of course, we had the 1970s malaise, and then with the HIV/AIDS pandemic, you had 3 years where President Reagan would never mention HIV/AIDS, and we had a very slow response, and we had the marshalling of very regressive forms of religion, and the continued marginalization, oppression of LGBTQ community. And of course, we look in the 21st century, we see H1N1 in 2009 coming out of the debacle of the financial crisis, and we saw an intense new forms of austerity, a deepening of the regimes of neoliberalism. When we think of what's going on now, the conversation is no longer a conversation in Congress about new forms of how do we restructure or reconstruct the social safety net. But the question is, are we paying workers too much? Are they getting too much money off unemployment? When we think globally, we see new forms of authoritarianism and new forms of fascism emerging. And of course, you see a deep democratic deficit throughout the U.S. So the hopefulness is tempered, but it's always believing in the power of people to transform circumstances. And that's what keeps us going.
And you bring up an interesting point, because I kind of want to roll back. We want to center the rest of our conversation on something that you said that is very important for us to unpack in order for us to actually see a future or to move towards a future, because we're talking about a shift. You looked at this in a historical context, right? You mentioned that transform consciousness. Yes. You mentioned that this moment is a moment that a consciousness can be transformed into something else, right? You said you're historical, which of course I am as well. And I think this, the reason why this conversation becomes important, because it's important that we remove the cataracts from our historical memory, and also to recognize the historical amnesia that people have based upon the fact that certain instances or crisis moments tend to mask or hide or distort the moments through which we've been before, which brings us to this particular question that I think is important. So if we're transforming consciousness, which of course, as a person who studies the development and formation of consciousness through movements and philosophy, specifically Africana philosophies, and we look at this historical 1918 that prompted also the Red Summer, we also have to put into that historical consciousness or that historical genealogy that you just laid out, the formation of Black studies, the formation of Africana studies into this particular map that you just drew out for us. And so what I would say is that, and we can kind of move forward from this, is that I would say that not only did those moments in that historical and the pandemic and all of those particular things that you just laid out produce those artifacts, but it also produced a consciousness that developed a Black studies or developed an Africana studies. And what I would argue now is that we're at a point now that that historical moment needs to be built upon to create a critical consciousness. We know now, we know at this particular point a lot, but we understand very little. What is the role of knowledge production and access to that knowledge production and Africana studies in this particular moment? Because again, this is a very tough question to unpack. I put a lot into that particular question. Yeah. And let's just dive in and we'll just spin out from there. Because of course, you know, we see stuff that's going on is that honestly, and I think I had talked, I mentioned this on social media not so long ago, is that a lot of folk now take the Africa out of Africana studies. It's just a study, right? With no particular clear historical genealogy or foundation or ideological instance. And it's definitely not based upon the historical processes that produced Africana studies in the first place.
Well, James, I think you raise a very interesting point that different forms of crises help form the conditions of possibility for new insurgent forms of thinking. And when we think of the litter of the 20th century, and we think of our particular moment now, deep moment of chaos, a moment of uncertainty. In this particular moment, the question does emerge, what new forms of thinking will enable us to grab a critical lever on our moment, and how will it help structure our new world? There are many conversations going on about what should be the next iteration of democratic cultures, how should we restructure the economy, how should we begin to rethink the role and function of education. But many of those conversations are still trapped within the same anchors that have organized the normality to which we want to move away from. So when we think of Africana studies or Black studies, I'm reminded of a conversation with my dear friend at the University of Virginia, Claudrina Harrell. Claudrina Harrell reminded me of an article recently in the Black Scholar written by Jonathan Fenderson, a brief comment that elucidated a key theme that's going on in the field, that there is a heightened visibility around Black studies, around Africana studies in our contemporary moment. But that visibility of the field is, as you stated, unconnected with a genealogy of the field, and it's unconnected to the historically material forces that are organizing the vast lives and life chances of Africans and African descended people across the Americas and across the world. I've looked at this, and I'm writing a piece now entitled The New Black Criticism that's really trying to track the emergence of this new style of thinking that now has come to occupy the centrality of what we think of as Black studies. There's a video of Angela Davis and Gayatri Spivak giving a talk in Germany, and they're having to respond to some of the ideas and themes that are connected with that formation, theoretical formation we call Afro-pessimism. And all too often, that formation is taken as what Black studies is. And you always have different and varying themes and trajectories. But the idea that Black studies is only one thing, the idea that there is not a deeper, longer intellectual arc to the project, that Black studies is in some ways a creature of the North Atlantic Academy and a creature of, you know, the departmentalization of Black studies is something I think we have to push back against. And in our moment, the role for critical scholarship and the role for critical scholars is to begin to look at how do we create those institutions, those formations that cultivate critical forms of thinking, but also forms of community where we can form and shape not only ourselves, but generative discourses of Black possibility. How do we form and shape students who are constantly learning, and how do we form and shape communities of scholars in conversation with one another and continuing to learn with one another and with students? I think that becomes a role for us in this moment to move beyond just the critique of the university as it actually exists to actually building those new communities of possibility. And part of that building has to pivot around the question of access. What we've seen since the ascendancy of a conservative Republican regime, and I remember this intensely in the 1990s in Virginia, when we saw the austerity regime in Virginia really decouple public funding from public education, such that you now basically have private institutions that operate under the title of being public, but their operations are based on the private operational modality of the university. In Virginia, it was first the cutting of the car tax, which funded not only K through 12, but also funded higher education. And I can remember as a student, during the downturn in the late 80s, we were organizing and fighting against cuts to historically Black colleges. And this was really under the regime of the first Black governor in Virginia, Doug Wilder. And we were fighting to maintain, not only just maintain funding, but also to have equitable funding for public higher education. But those regimes are gone. And that has been decades in the making. So the question becomes, what new formations, how do we develop develop the legitimation of publicly funded higher education? What we're seeing is so many, you've seen two to three generations of students who have been really brought up within a framework that austerity is good, the state is bad. This is why we have so many left libertarians in the Democratic left, where we no longer see any state function. How do we then connect that with material flows globally? Because what we're seeing is there is no longer the idea that the nation state in its sovereign guise will enable folks to pull out of this malaise. It's going to have to be planetary, because not only is this pandemic planetary, but the environmental crisis is planetary. The economic crisis is planetary. Just look, when you go to the stores, our supply chains are breaking. Our food chains are breaking. Our food supply chains are breaking because of the ways in which communities are interconnected. So access is going to be a huge pivot point for how we create these new communities to sustain critical Black intellectual life in the future. Black Studies has an archive we can pull from. We look at the idea of the Institute of the Black World. And we remember the wonderful book by Derek White on the IBW. We're seeing new virtual communities emerge with a series of critical conversations. Just the previous evening, there was a wonderful conversation between Theaster Gates and Fred Moten. And James, you remember we had Theaster Gates down with us in Winston-Salem to look at, you know, how do we create sustainable forms of artistic community for the East Winston corridor? How do we leverage different components within Winston-Salem State and the broader Winston community to sustain that? I think we're going to have to look deeper within that tradition and draw from that. How do we build and sustain those communities? How do we support access to those spaces that's not just built on elite access? Too often we think of Black Studies as what goes on in very elite academic spaces, but how do we begin to think, and the Black Studies lives really in our regional public institutions where the majority of students are created.
Must have been reading my thought stream of thought process, because I actually wanted that point that you just made. Let's put a pin in that point, because I think that this point that you're making specifically in the context of the creating, because you mentioned multiple points here. You talked about access. You talked about the creating of the creating institutions are leaning on the history of Black folk or African people creating institutions across the world. Of course, anti-colonialist movements using student movements and also unions on the continent. You also talk about cultural institutions throughout the Americas, specifically in Southern America, Latin America. Here in the United States, you had a combination of all of those attempts. You had a combination of anti-colonialist organizations such as the African Liberation Support Committees. You had the Council of African Affairs. You had a number of institutions. You also had institutions who were wedded to the foundational moral principles of the United States. You have Urban League. You have certain institutions that we have a broad range here in the United States. But I wanted to pull on the point that you're making right now. In order for us to create, in order for us to seize upon the genealogy or the history that folk were literally writing, fighting for, to create a radical imagination, the point that you're making about how we reconceptualize institutions become important. Fred Moten and Stephan Harney and others, but specifically in Fred Moten, and both of us know Fred Moten, is that he talks about this undercommons, but he talks about it, you know, in a theoretical sense, but we now need to implement that. What does that look like? When we look at the history of Africana studies being born in what we would call a non-institutional, non-traditional instance, meaning that Black folk were studying in different capacities before it was so-called moved into the academy. And so now the problem is, I would argue, is that it is so indoctrinated in the elite academies that now it is really lost, or I shouldn't say is lost, because there's still, you can't, the knowledge is rooted in community. It can't be lost, but it is actually definitely distorted. How do we really understand this connection between looking deeper and also, can you unpack the planetary aspect? Because Africana Studies, again, is planetary in its knowledge development and production itself.
There are two questions in that. One is, how do we leverage the diverse ecological terrain, the institutional terrain of Black studies, and how do we begin to critically comprehend that history and leverage that for our present. So to go to the first issue of how do we understand this diverse institutional ecology that is Black studies? Part of that is really to think institutions, not beyond just individuals, but also institutions as spaces that shape particular types of intellectual communities, as well as spaces that shape different types of intellectual questions that are then placed on the agenda. Those practices don't happen in the sort of atomic, the isolated individual, the isolated atomic individual. They act in community, whether that community is, how do we think about that community as being proximate to one another in sort of physical proximity, but the community is in dialogue and in conversation. We need to continue to deepen our understanding of the dialogue of ideas in these institutional and their institutional expressions and how they help to shape and form a cadre of thinkers, students, and communities to continue on that work. Then the question becomes, how do we leverage that knowledge to then inform how we respond in our contemporary moment? I'm amazed at the ways in which we're seeing a proliferation of conversations emerge within new media spaces, Zoom platforms, YouTube, other media spaces, Facebook. Folks who have been in conversation now are in more immediate conversation. The question becomes, does that continue into the long future? And then does that then fuel new institutional expressions and formations? It's not about being paid, or it's not about how does one increase one's intellectual capital according to the market logic of the university. Instead, it's about how do we create new spaces of community? How do we create new spaces of intellectual formation? And then how do we enable individuals to have access to that so that then we have this proliferation on the ground in Richmond and Winston-Salem and Norfolk and Raleigh, in Atlanta? How does it then enable the already existing rich ecology of institutional expressions to proliferate? An exemplary example of this would be Sankofa in DC, and what Holly Garima has been able to create in that space, not only a space for healthy food alternatives, but so you can feed your body, but also a space where you have some of the most interesting and generative conversations. You have spaces that welcome dialogue across continents. Of course, you're bringing together Africa and its diaspora. So how do we then, for lack of a better term, how do we scale up the ethos of a Sankofa to then become the ethos of the university? And I think, Greg Carr is using, Greg is using this hashtag, jailbreak the Black University. And it's not, this is really about how do we catalyze the vision of those conferences that began at Howard in 1960.
We're listening to a recent conversation I had with Dr. Corey D.B. Walker, where we explore the contradictory musings of this, quote, new, unquote, Black Studies. Corey D.B. Walker is the Wake Forest Professor of the Humanities at Wake Forest University. He is author of A Noble Fight, African-American Freemasonry and the Struggle for Democracy in America. He has published over 60 articles, essays, book chapters, and reviews, appearing in a wide range of scholarly journals, and co-directed and co-produced the documentary film Fifeville with acclaimed artist and filmmaker Kevin Jerome Everson. He has held faculty and academic leadership positions at Brown University, University of Virginia, Virginia Union University, and Winston-Salem State University, and visiting faculty appointments at Frederick Schuyler University, Agena, Union Presbyterian Seminary, and University of Richmond. Our show is produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descendant communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Corporation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, and Ghana, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all peoples. Continue to enjoy the program.
Those conferences that began at Howard in 1967 about creating a Black university, a liberative space of deep thought, a space of intellectual formation that critically links ethics, experience, and forms of knowledge, or forms of knowing, or epistemology. I think that a deeper, richer understanding of the institutional expressions throughout African diasporic history leveraged in our present to respond to the current crisis and the desires to move away from a marketplace university to a university that really expresses the institutional values and ethos of the aspirations of community to which we embrace and seek that affirm wholeness, will then enable us to create new visions of possibility and connect those with already existing practices that are on the ground, that are rich and varied, and that we then are able to move beyond just an invocation of moving beyond the university, but then actually enacting it in new practices and new modalities of intellectual life. That's the big challenge for us. And I think it goes to, I'm reminded of your notion of analysis, the paralysis of analysis. And we understand the crisis of the contemporary university. That has been written about. I taught a class when I was at Brown entitled The Last Professors, and we began to chart this crisis looking at Clyde Barrow's book, Universities in the Capitalist State, looking at the rise of the research university in connection to the rise of specific forms of capitalism in the late 19th, early 20th century, to a whole series of texts that started to come out around the 1990s and early 2000s that looked at the crisis of the university and the moves to austerity and the moves around the privatization and the financialization of higher education. What this public health crisis has done is deepened the awareness of that and deepened also the awareness that we have to move beyond. Hence, you have folks looking at Black Study on the pages of Boston Review. There's been a return to a series of pivotal moments in histories of African and African diasporic people to begin to think about how do you organize and how do you create institutions in moments of crisis. But most importantly, it has enabled us to understand that the crisis has been with us. Folks have responded. The question is, how do we connect in a deep, intimate way to those responses? And then how do we build and sustain those communities that then help us to organize, help us to understand, and help us to develop an ethic of deep knowledge in connection with community and well-being.
And I wanted to push on this notion here because you raise a very interesting point within the context of the university as the marketplace. I see knowledge production has been commodified, specifically stripped of its ethos, its moral ability to move beyond its commodification, because the university is directly tied to a racial capitalist production system, which is also something that of the contradiction of Africana studies itself, having an alternative view of the world. And you also mentioned specifically folks have responded. And I'm thinking here of the decolonization of the Fees Must Fall movement, the Roles Must Fall movement, the decolonizing the curriculum movement that literally was moving. And, you know, we talked about this. We've done work on this. We've done shows on this. But I think in this particular moment, when you talk about work has been done, is that young folk, particularly on the continent of Africa, in the Fallist movement, the Fees Must Fall and the decolonizing the curriculum movements that was happening in Canada, and also that is literally happening on the ground with the Black consciousness movement, or the Black consciousness connection that is happening on the ground with young folk in Brazil. Yes, I agree. Folk have been doing this. And I would say, obviously, this is back in 2015, 2014, when this stuff was happening. But one of the things that I guess I have a critique on or a position on as a person who literally looks at everything internationally, has been in these places, have communicated with a lot of these particular folk who were actually participating in these movements on the continent and in the Americas, have done a lot of work on them personally, is that one of the things that I see in the context of the United States in the university and Africana studies or Black studies or folk who study Black radical tradition, there's no clear connection to Africa or these particular movements. So this is one of the instances, because this work has been started, because you can also say that the decolonizing the university movement, the decolonizing or the Fallist movements kind of anticipated this particular moment here.
What you're pointing to is really there's a critical erasure not only of historical memory, but there's also an erasure of planetary connections and planetary possibilities. What we're looking at with the emergence of these new crises, particularly in the 21st century, is the reassertion of new forms of nationalism. And these new forms of nationalism also express themselves in the university and the ways in which we think about the university. I'm reminded that one of the big things that has preoccupied university thought and progress and protest in the 21st century has been questions around slavery and questions around reparations. And, you know, universities against slavery, that university studying slavery, those formations rather, also inhere within them a deeply nationalistic ethos that privileges the United States as a nation state and then inserts African and African descendant people within the nation state project. So the dominant ideas are always already connected to and flow within a nationalist framework. The work on the memory of the slave that animates so much of Black criticism in our moment, and the return of the slave, both as, you know, this figure of thinking and this figure of critique, is also tied to this nationalist dimension and this nationalist ethos, such that the deep planetary connections that animated Africana studies become attenuated within these dominant forms, and in our contemporary moment. And these dominant forms map onto the new expressions of nationalism in our political moment. So you're pointing to a deep problem that is not only about intellectual life, but it's a deep problem that then expresses itself in our collective political life. That these new forms of nationalism that are smuggled, that are surreptitiously operating within our structures, that to colonize and center on what we think of as the core of Africana studies in an essentialist manner, really mitigates against connecting to global movements for equality, global movements of justice, and global movements of struggle, so that we don't connect, let's say, the university studying slavery is a question around redress, a question around justice, but we're not connecting that with epistemic justice, with fees must fall. How do you begin to rethink the African university? How do we begin to rethink the American university in a deep constitutive sense? How do we decolonize disciplines? And how do we begin to organize new forms of intellectual life? Those particular projects become peripheral or ancillary. They're there, but they don't occupy the center of intellectual life. And it also feeds a particularly virulent politics, and we see this within the resurgence of the discourse on reparations, and we're both concerned about this discourse on reparations right now, and this idea of ADOS, American descendants of slavery. Slavery was a planetary problem, and COBRA have always, and folks in the reparations movement from the 19th century all the way to the 21st century have always seen this as a global enterprise. We're in the middle of the decade of people descended of African descent proclaimed by the UN 2015 to 2024. We're in the middle of that, and yet, in the U.S., the discourse is sort of myopically and narrowly nationalistic, even within the dominant discourse that's taken as Black studies. That has to be a question that we have to take up, but I do not think, and I think you're right, it is not unconnected with these global movements for justice that just really aren't gaining critical traction in what is taken as the dominant expression of Black studies, which occurs within the elite institutional spaces of the American Academy. So we can see a market function and a market motive that is deeply invested in maintaining those dominant logics of U.S. empire in setting the intellectual agenda. Dwight Eisenhower's famous phrase, we have to be concerned about the military, the military industrial complex. What Eisenhower was also preoccupied with was the academic dimension of the military and academic industrial complex. And I think we need to be very concerned with it and how we begin to understand those dominant intellectual agendas that sort of is, in as much as they attempt to critique U.S. empire, they inhabit, and their intellectual expression is a reaffirmation of the centrality of U.S. empire.
And that brings me to the point, because I was going to synthesize what you just kind of laid out for our audience here, is that, you know, you talk about these new forms of nationalism that are definitely informed by these older, very aggressive forms of nationalism that comes out of a European historiography and of imperialism and colonialism. And then the connection between the structure of the university was an appendage of this imperialism. This also, when you're talking about the enslavement, you're talking about race itself, it was born within the intellectual edifices of Oxford, and these particular instances of people trying to scientifically prove certain particular knowledge forms, to create knowledge to support its projects of imperialism, its projects of enslavement. And so one of the things that I think that we're, you know, in what you're saying that, you know, and you can, you know, unpack this or expand upon this, is that Africana studies, particularly being born in these elite institutions and other institutions who tend to want to follow that particular model of education, because elite institutions themselves have a very direct lineage to the institutions that come out of the processes and the proliferation of slavery itself, because these institutions are simultaneous and they are reinforcing each other, is that if Black studies, Africana studies, Black radical tradition are folk who have not been exposed or even interrogate that genealogy, they're learning this cyclical or this pattern of reinstitutionalizing the same power relations based upon these new forms of nationalism, which are actually basically neo-colonial and neo-liberal themselves and not radical at all.
What you're pointing to, and this gets to the first where our conversation really began, was what do we see as the role of Black scholars and Black institutions in our contemporary moment, and then how do we open up access to them? When we begin to think through the deep intellectual archive, and these archives are always in formation, when we begin to think through these archives, what we find is a deep suspicion and critique of those knowledges that seek to dominate the expression of Black life and Black possibility in relation to the creation of new institutional and ideological expressions of Black humanity, Black possibility. It is not only connected to, these are forms of knowing and ways of expressing in the world that are informed by deep African impulses, African archives, but also forward-looking to new expressions and new modalities of being human or being human in the world. So that dialectic of critique and creation is one in which Black studies fully inhabits and expresses and pivots around, such that it does not see critique as unconnected with creation, nor does it allow critique to imperialize itself in terms of critique externally. Critique is always self-reflexive. Hence, you have these deep dialogues and debates within Black intellectual life. The iconic debate between practical education and liberal arts education that we put Du Bois and Booker T. Washington in conversation, or the question around aesthetic forms that we see with the Dasein group and folks like Toni Morrison or folks like Nathan Scott at Howard in the 1950s, or even at our contemporary moment, where we're having a conversation really around the question of how do we understand Black existence historically. And we're seeing this question being raised acutely in the discourse with Wilderson and the responses by Lewis Gordon's response to it, if you will. What we take all of that to be is that these deep modes of critique exist in conversation with creating new moments of possibility, that we cannot disentangle absolutely thinking from material and political expressions in the world, nor can we collapse them simply to an ideological expression of what goes on in the world. So how do we begin to understand and inhabit that space and think that space in between, if you will? I think in our moment, for critical Black intellectuals, for scholars of Black studies that operate under varying disciplinary domains. So to be a Black studies scholar, one doesn't have to operate purely under that domain of Black studies as the university is organized. I'm always reminded that there are professors who are located in other departments who've been doing Black studies critically for a long time. But it is important now to really and fundamentally address how certain questions, certain issues have come to colonize the Black studies agenda and to take and to position itself as the dominant expression of Black studies in a moment of deep institutional transformation around the politics of austerity and neoliberal capital, and in a political moment where we have the reassertion of narrowly nationalistic forms of sovereignty and deeply anti-democratic forms of fascist politics. How has it been that in this moment, a moment of crisis of Black folks nationally within the US and globally, and people of color around the world, and the continued marginalization and degradation of life and life chances due to planetary change. How is it in that moment, certain questions around social death come to preoccupy the intellectual agenda? That even in these moments, there are folks struggling and moving, expressing new forms of possibility in the world. But yet, in the heart of empire, our intellectual expression is one that is constitutive and coextensive of the politics of empire. Those are issues that I'm very much I'm very concerned with, and I think those issues really go to the role of what we must do, really inform how we understand the role of critical scholars in our moment. And it really goes to that pivotal essay by Vincent Harding on the vocation of the Black scholar and the struggles of the Black community. And when Harding invokes Murray Evans' poem, "Speak Truth to the People," that's what we must do, and how we do that, and the ways in which we do that, and the languages that we use to do that can then help us give expression to new forms of community and new institutional expressions that facilitate human life and facilitate life more generally in a planetary, in a moment of planetary plenitude and possibility.
And to riff off of my colleague, Rob Till Neely, who is at Oxford, who wrote a very important, and who's working on different other work as well right now, wrote a article about a year or two ago that talked about putting Africa back into Africa, African studies. And so what I'm hearing here too is that there's a conversation that is in concert with this particular strain of thought, is that we need to put African ethics back into an Africana studies, this the idea of a collectivism. And so what we're actually doing here is that these individual contradictions that people are dealing with on their intellectual and ideological and spiritual levels, these contestations have filtered themselves into the different edifices of an institution, of elite educational institutions that exploit that individualism, that holds people responsible to being only responsible to their career, their profession, as opposed to speaking truth to community, speaking with particular folk. And so when you talk about this space in between, I'm thinking about, you know, we talk about the conversation of Booker T and Du Bois. I'm thinking about the conversation between Afrofuturism and Afropessimism. I'm thinking about, you know, free jazz artists such as Ornette Coleman, Archie Shepp, John Coltrane, who said that he wants to play the music that literally changes the world. The process is to do that. He's in between this space. He's searching for this particular note. He's constantly refining the processes of experiences on a spiritual level, on a physical level, on an intellectual level, and trying to harmonize that into something that can blow, that he can blow his musical instrument. He can blow the saxophone to change the world. So I'm thinking about Jaffa, off of Jaffa. I'm thinking about the sister up in New York right now. I think her name is Jotavia, just released a film not so long ago. Nina Simone was in this particular film. But she's up in New York. She's a filmmaker. I'm thinking about this contestation, really, of what we're doing is once people come into these academies, these edifices, these elite structures, it actually plays on that. And so now you're producing these particular forms of thinking that is only relegated to any type of progress based upon an individualized, professionalized idea of what it means to be a part, what it means to be human, what it means to be a part of a society, but also is also the questions that are come up between what is a family, what is a community, what is an institution itself.
If we take, or if we move to, in this moment of crisis, if we move to sort of a suspension of this pursuit of a proper protocol of what is Black studies, let's suspend the discourse of Blacks, let's suspend rather the proper name of Black studies, because it's cropping up everywhere and it's serving as a referent and it's being freighted with a whole host of ideas, images, and some things, in some ways rather, deep mythologies. If we suspend that, and then if we suspend that dimension and open it up as a space of exploration, then in this moment of deep political pessimism, and we've seen empirical evidence of a generation of students and young people who the formal democratic project doesn't hold as much legitimacy as new expressions of political possibility that are deeply democratic but don't show themselves up on our polling data and polling measures. There's an anxiety in our contemporary moment that is also fueling an energy around exploring new spaces of possibility. So if Black studies becomes that institutional expression or the intellectual arm of that search, then we can begin to develop an intellectual agenda commensurate with that political expression of the search for new possibility. It's much analogous to the ways in which Vincent Harding imagined Black studies as a...
Due to time constraints, you can listen to the entire program on Africa World Now Project's SoundCloud. Just search Africa World Now Project. That's it for Africa World Now Project for this week. I would like to thank you for joining us today and look forward to spending time with you next week. We can be reached through all your regular social media platforms. Email africaworldnowproject@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at AFWRLDNWPRJ. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. The Africa World Now Project Collective consists of international media journalist, executive producer, and human rights activist Moise Mutale, Africa World Now Project media correspondent Funda Ngunda, senior research, content contributor, and production director Dr. Tasneem Siddiqui, senior researcher and content contributor and production associate Dr. Josh Myers, associate producer and content contributor Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, technology advisor is Byron Gray of Grayworks Technology, and creative director is Judah Pope. Africa World Now Project is heard every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WSNC, NPR affiliate and broadcasting service of Winston-Salem State University. Shows are archived weekly on SoundCloud. Search Africa World Now Project. Until next week, be safe, be peaceful, and above all, be intelligent.